Education Board, and our main speaker this evening is Frank.
Oh, boy. My name is Frank. I'm an alcoholic. Can I turn this, put this down a little bit? I feel like it's going to poke me in the nose. Okay, that's great. Thanks. I am unusually nervous tonight. I thought I was a 10-minute speaker until about a day or two ago. I first came to this meeting. Van was a friend of mine. When I was newly sober, he was a god to me. I don't think he was decades ahead of me, but he sort of sounded like it. And he brought me here, and in those days, there was about 50 or 60 members. Who knew? Speak into the mic. I'm being told for the first time that someone can't hear me. You may rue the day you asked for that. I think one of the reasons I'm nervous is I always think of this group as someplace that has circuit speakers and longtime sober people and that kind of stuff. And I'm pretty much garden variety drunk. I don't have an exceptional story. I'm just sort of a everyday alcoholic. The only thing I can tell you I'm an expert at is how I stayed sober today. That's all I know. Because if I tell you about decades ago, who knows? Maybe I'm remembering wrong. I don't know. I will not tell you I'm an expert on AA. I'm not an expert on the big book. I'm not an expert on anything to do with this. All I'll do is I'll tell you as best I can remember what happened to me and what it's like now. That's the best I can do. And if you are new, I want you to know that when I was new, I sat there and I fell asleep for the first couple of months. So if you feel like dozing off, please do so. I owe you, seriously. So don't worry about that. The other thing to remember is if you're new, this isn't like any other outfit. It's like any other organization. In this group, if you've got a day, you hardly know your own name, and you're drooling, you're like a rock star. Everybody wants to talk to you. They want your number. You know, honest to God, people will want to have your babies, and those are just the guys, you know. It's unbelievable how special a newcomer is. So please stay with it. If you think you're in the right place, enjoy today and see what happens. And when I was new, I hated it here, but every night, for some reason, I knew what meeting I was going to go to tomorrow. If that works for you, great. If it doesn't, next week there's going to be a much better speaker. I have it on very good authority. Try next week. Okay, I was born in 1950. I'm 66 years old. I came into the program in 1979. I'm 37 years sober. And I only tell you that because I don't want anybody taking their shoes off to do their math as we go through this thing, okay? I was born in Brooklyn. My father was. Okay, we got that out of the way. Somebody liked me. My mom and dad, my mother was Irish-American, my dad was Italian-American, Sicilian. We lived in Brooklyn. I was born at St. Mary's Hospital and lived in Garfield Place. So that was where I started everything up. We ultimately had 8 kids in the family, 6 girls and 2 boys. I was the second oldest. And we had an amazing family. I mean, if you ever go to my house now, even though we're old, it is a laugh riot. And in our house, there was, because it's a big family, it's like running, it's like in the old westerns where you'd have 12 horses driving a stagecoach. My mother had the reins of all these things. 10 people sat at the dinner table every night, and that's if we didn't have company. And so there was a lot of discipline in that house. There was also a lot of love. There was a lot of crying. There was a lot of laughing. There was a lot of love. There was a lot of anger. We had it all. And today, you can go to jail for stuff that happened in my household and in my Catholic school. But back in those days, people didn't know any better. So if you didn't do something right, you got the back of the hand. That's how we grow up. You know, I am really grateful for everything that happened there. Everything that happened there wasn't really something I'd like to repeat on my children or my grandchildren. But I must tell you, it got me where I am today, and I don't regret it. And Alcoholics Anonymous taught me that. And one of the reasons I mention it is that a buddy of mine, Jim A., is here. We got sober together at Lenox Hill in 1979. We were the class of 79. We went out for burgers at Jackson Hole before the meeting all the time. It was fantastic. I mean, really great. You know, he was there, AC, Ken, Joe. As far as I know, all of us who have survived natural causes are still in AA, and it was a great group. I was very lucky. We all had sponsors who had sponsors who had sponsors, and it was great. But we went out speaking together. He used to say that he came from a household, and in this particular household that he came from, he had to learn at a very early age, when he walked into a room, how to read a room. And as a little child, he had to learn, am I supposed to be quiet? Am I supposed to be intelligent, funny, invisible? What am I supposed to be? Well, when you come from a house in my world, that's what it was like. I spent a lot of time ducking, you know, at home and at school. I spent a lot of time not knowing what was going to happen next. And so fear became a big thing. And so therefore, I spent a lot of time trying to stay safe. Now, I'm only mentioning this because I think you heard me earlier. I'm not 5 anymore. I'm not 12. I'm not even 21. I know I look 21, but I'm not. So why is it as an adult I'm still wandering around trying to be safe? I mean, look at me. There's got to be a lot of people here are going to get attacked before me if somebody comes in here and is looking for an alcoholic to pummel, okay? I'm not the guy. I mean, I'm 6'2". I'm over 280 pounds. I'm the last guy. Why would I feel frightened coming up to the speaker? What's going to happen to me? I'll get back to that, but that's what I want you to know about my childhood and what I carried through into AA. I didn't drink until I was about 18. I turned 18. I got drunk that night. It was May of 1968, and I got drunk, and I didn't behave as I wanted to, but I liked it, and I said, I got to get good at this, because I didn't want to embarrass myself or do something. I just wanted to get good at it. So I practiced all summer before I went to college. And I got so drunk in my first week that I was put on, I was already on academic probation as I got in. Then I was put on dormitory probation. I think that's something about some of the prefects took exception to me wanting to get in a fist fight with him. And drinking was a real problem. Within a few months, I'd gone through all the money that I had earned and saved for spending money. My dad paid for my education, but I paid for my expenses. And so I had to get a job in a bar to support my habit. I am one of the few guys that you will meet who went to school in 1968 and has virtually no drug story, okay? So don't worry. I hope I didn't break the rules by saying holy free holies or something, but I'm not going to be talking about drugs except say that I don't have one, which is kind of unusual. I just drank, and I worked in the bars. I stayed with the bars for a long time. I loved it. I loved going in there. I loved everything about it. As my friend Walter in Tarrytown used to say, when I walked into that bar, I loved the smell of the stale beer. I loved the old cigarette smell. I loved, you know, that my sneakers were sticky as I walked over where everybody had spilled things the night before. I mean, all of those disgusting things that people hate about bars, I loved about bars. I really did. I drank mostly Jack Daniels. I drank gin and tonics, but I drank them like 4 shots to a little drip of tonic. You know, as somebody said to me, Frank, you drink like it's your job. And that's what I did. And I went through, I mean, to give you an idea, I went to a Jesuit school in Cleveland, Ohio. It was, there was a lot of big drinkers there, and I was the one that was serving most of them. And it took me 9 years to get out of a 4-year school. So we don't have to talk too much about that. I basically got up about lunchtime, went to lunch, had lunch, ate, went back to bed, got up about 4, hitchhiked to work, had a hamburger before work, worked until 1, went out to an after-hours joint until 3 or 4 or 5, whatever it was. Oftentimes I'd be coming out into daylight when other people were going to work, and I just thought, you are a real lowlife, Frank. But that's the way it was. And that was kind of normal for me. And after 4 or 5 years of this, everybody that I was with did the same thing. We on Sundays, we had the day off. Sometimes I would take a health day where I wouldn't drink at all. Other times, we'd play softball in the summer, and I would just get drunk so that I couldn't actually play baseball anymore or softball. And so that was the kind of thing we did. It took everybody. I thought everybody drank that way. I had no idea that people didn't drink that way, that this was unusual. It was a surprise to me. At one point I realized, in my 5th year of school, I realized that my life was going down the toilet. I was sitting there watching everybody, and, you know, I just made a pact with another guy never to pick up another drink. And that night I walked into the No Name Saloon. I think one of the reasons I like bars is I love the names of them. And he was drunk, and we had just made a pact not to drink the night before. So I thought, this not drinking isn't going to get me anywhere. I have to do something drastic. So I decided to get married, and I did. And I did. So I proposed. She said yes. And we got married a few months later. So that August, we got married. And now I am married, and I have to behave like my dad. I have to be an adult. I have to dress right. I have to go to work. I got to do all these things. I got to be all this stuff. And it didn't work for me. And I started to get drunk again, so I started to control it, and the controlling didn't work, so I controlled some more. And then I went to work one day. I worked in Wall Street. By that time, I'd moved back to New York. And somebody who knew that I used to drink a lot and now I didn't said to me, I have this fellowship that I belong to that has guidelines for living, and I think you might enjoy it. And I thought, well, you know, that'll be good for you. You're kind of a jerk. I think that'll be great for you. But he said Alcoholics Anonymous, he said, or AA, and I thought, I might need them one day. So I went. I hated it. There was a lot of people like you, clearly looking good, but that can't be true. But it was intriguing. And within a day, I had my last drink, so I celebrate March 3rd, 1979 as my anniversary. And I got in with Jim and the boys. We went to meetings. We went to more meetings. We spoke at meetings. We went out. We took jobs. We did what our sponsors say. We did all of these things. And very, very slowly, I started to feel better. I always tell the story of I used to wear shirts and jackets like this. And when I first came in, I had a watch. And this was all my cuff was all frayed. And I can remember that I was hiding it so that nobody would see it. And I know now that, you know, my outsides were what I thought my insides looked like. And your outsides looked amazing. And I wanted a piece of that, so I kept coming back. Anyway, I did that. I've already nervously gone through most of my time, so I'm going to skip ahead now, because at 6 years sober, I got transferred. 2 years sober, my wife told me she needed a separation, that she couldn't grow with me around. You probably can't imagine somebody thinking that I would hold them back in some way, but that's what she thought. And we ended up splitting up. We didn't get back together. We had 3 kids, which was fantastic. We then went on to, argue our way through the next few years. Then at 6 years sober, I got transferred to London. And I'm actually visiting from London. I never came back. I've been there for 31 years. And I went to London, and they hired me as a salesman. Next thing you know, I was a manager. But when I got over there, I had nothing to do but to go to meetings and go to work. And that's what I did. And I went to, and I started over on the steps. And I redefined my first step as, am I willing to go to any lengths? And then I had a first, second, and third step. I can't do it. Maybe he can. I'm going to let him. Then I did a fourth step where I had three columns. I had defects of characters, and I stuck to them. I got 15 minutes left? How did that happen? I can go slower. Sorry. I thought I had 5 minutes left. Damn. I'm sorry. I was channeling your thoughts there. So I really got a sense of the program for the first time. I don't know what I did the first time around. I had a fantastic, loving, caring, gentle sponsor by the name of Durr. I don't know if any of you knew him, but Durr was a lovely, lovely man and just what I needed because, you know, on the inside I was like John Wayne or the Hulk, you know, but really I was just a little cream puff, you know. And somehow or other he put up with my nonsense and he was great for me. He really was. Now I'm in London, and I'm doing these steps over, and I got things a little different way around. And I know that I thought I did a resentment list, but I must have done it differently, because suddenly I put these resentments down. By the time I was 12 years old, I realized that for the rest of my life, only the names were changed to protect the innocent. I mean, it was the same story. You know, I began seeing at 12 years old that when I was married in my 20s, my poor wife, she was actually getting the brunt of my resentments against my parents, my teachers, whoever. I mean, that wasn't very fair. And I didn't see that before. I didn't see that the first time around. I mean, I hear people balking, say they don't want to do their fourth step. Well, if you don't want to do the fourth step, don't do it. You know, just go to meetings and don't drink today. That's all you have to do as far as I'm concerned. That's what they told me to do. But I will tell you, when I did the fourth step, I felt better. And, you know, when I was a bartender, I didn't want to drink that garbage we used to give to the visitors. You know, I wanted the top shelf stuff all the time. And, you know, to me, the fourth step, doing a fourth step and doing it properly, that's top shelf drinking. I like that. That's Jack Daniels. And so I grabbed onto that because the Jack Daniels wasn't working for me anymore. And that's what happened, you know. And I remember either in the fourth step or the fifth step thinking to myself, how could I have been so wrong for so long? I thought I knew something, and now I realize I didn't know anything. That was staggering for me, but it leveled the field. Now, I want to get back to that stuff I was talking about when I was in childhood. Let's go to 20 years sober. I got remarried when I was about, I don't know, 18 or 19 years sober. It didn't work. I felt terrible because I thought, how could I make this mistake? You know, we both really cared about each other. We really tried to make it work. It didn't work. I still can't tell you exactly what it was about, except that we were very civil to each other and we tried like hell to make it work. Oops, I'm not supposed to say that. And then right after that came, and I normally just say I had a life-altering event. A life-altering event is you have a baby, there's a death in the family, you get a promotion, you get fired. It could be anything. It's triggered. Everybody has them. Okay, this was my life-altering event. Because I'm in New York, I'll say for the first time at an AA meeting, I worked for a firm that lost hundreds of people in the World Trade Center. I sat in London. I was supposed to be in the New York office. I wasn't in the New York office. I sat there, and I was thinking about it, and I just shook my head, and I said, what's this about? And I got home, and I think I don't have any memory for 3 days. I mean, it was some kind of a shock that we went through, whatever. I mean, it's not there. I'm not saying this because I am not a victim. I didn't lose a parent. I didn't lose a spouse, a child, anything like that. I'm not a victim. I don't want you to think that. I don't want to talk about 9/11. What I want to talk about is the fact that I know that you know that feeling really well. That was my life-altering event. And I said, when I came out of there, I no longer want to walk in the world the way I used to walk in the world. Not the way I was drinking, and not the way I was my first 20 years sober. I don't want to walk in the world that way anymore. So what does that mean? I suddenly realized that I talked a really good game. I talked about a higher power. And when I was in a meeting, this meeting is like a church for me. You know, whether it's in a basement or wherever it is, it's like a church. This is my thing. This is where I feel most at ease, most centered. And I realized that when I left, I did not have a higher power. I didn't bring him with me. I guess I trusted him on all things AA, but what does he know about Wall Street? What does he know about this barracuda tank that I work in? What does he know about the financial responsibilities of putting three kids through school? What does he know? I better do this. I was a jerk. You know, I needed to let go. I needed to stop talking about it and start doing it. And so that's what happened. And I had to practice with a higher power. I walked around the streets talking to him. I hope my lips weren't moving. Because I talked all the time. I would look at the side of buses for a signal, you know, for a sign. I remember Edward R. Murrow had his wife in England during the war, and she looked out over London, because they were great London fans, and they looked out, and she saw this gigantic, right in the middle of the Blitz, through the cloud, she saw this giant billboard that said courage, and she thought, what a wonderful thing for the people of England. By the way, courage is the name of a beer. It was a beer sign. I mention that because I now look for those signs. I look for the people who I meet. I met a guy, there's a guy in this group by the name of Nye. It turns out we went to the same group in London, and I'm trying to figure out who was he. How could I forget a guy with a name like Nye? Okay? How's that going to happen? Not like I tripped over them a lot, you know. You know, I got to look, I have to look, I have to pay attention. I want to be present. And, you know, I started to do this, and then I had a reversal of fortune where, you know, I'd had X amount put away, and over time my job changed. I mean, this isn't new. I mean, a lot of people know what this is about. Certainly the guys I went to school with, a lot of them do. And, you know, I basically had to start over. And I have to look at that differently. I have to say this happened for a reason. This isn't a punishment. You know, this isn't some horrible karma thing that's coming. There's a lesson I need to learn here. So cut the garbage, Frank. Just look around and figure out, what are you supposed to do today? Stop your whining, you big baby. That goes on in my head. I will deny that if anybody brings that up. Okay. But I realized that in my head I had this big fat liar. He used to lie to me. He's lying to me today, and he's always going to lie to me. And so I don't want to listen to him. And he says, you're not going to make it. You can't make it. You're a loser. You're this, you're that, or whatever. Or he takes the flip side. He says, you are the greatest. You are wonderful. You're the king of the universe. They're both lies. I don't listen to him. In AA, they used to say, do the next right thing. You know what? I have no idea what the next right thing is. I'm trying to find out, what's the truth about this? Here's the truth. I'm sober 37 years. I don't know that much. I'm not an expert. You know, I'm just trying. I'm just starting. I'm starting to do this. I'm trying to learn. I had dinner with Jackie today, and I was listening to her, and I thought, that's really great. I got to remember that. You know, I like to go to a lot of meetings because when I go to meetings, some of you are there and some of you are going to say something that I need to hear. So I have to stay present. I don't look at my phone and read emails during a meeting. It's too distracting for me. I know you're sober enough to do that, but I'm not. And if I see somebody else's machine on, it's a distraction for me. I get distracted. Durr told me to sit up in front, thank the speaker. I still do that. You know, that's what he said. I listen to that. Durr knew when he first met me, this guy is not the brightest bulb in AA. And so he didn't try to pitch me on the big book. He didn't give me a 12 and 12. He didn't do any of that stuff for me. You know, what he said was, you stick with the slogans. I said, what are the slogans? He said, it's like the baby talk, he said. And I stuck with the baby talk. I'd call him up and there'd be a crisis at home and I'd be doing this. I'd be ranting and raving. God, I could have been on the phone for 2 minutes or 20 minutes. I don't know. Poor Durr was so patient. And at the end of it, he'd say, I'd say, what should I do? He'd say, first things first. You know, I thought I could get one of those, you know, I could get one of those eight balls that you turn over. It says, easy does it. But, you know, he was right. He was right on the money. It was fantastic. These people in AA, they knew. I went to a meeting with Van and another guy. I used to drive in. I got 5 minutes left, so you're going to be off the hook in a minute. So stay patient. I went to the Mustard Seed. It was an 8:30 or 9:30 meeting, and that's where I got to meet Van. He was a sweet guy. I love this guy. And it was either him or another guy. I can't remember. They always sat next to each other. And the guy said, the only time I ever get angry is when I expect something to happen and it doesn't, or if I don't expect something to happen and it does. That made no sense to me whatsoever. But then he said, so if I have no expectations of what's going to happen, I'm not going to get angry. That I understood. It was baby talk. And it worked for me. Now, the other thing is about this staying safe. What is that about? I spent a lot of time in relationships and other things, and I know now, I hated four-letter words. You know, you can't curse here. I hated the four-letter words in AA, like love. I didn't want to hear that. Like hug with two G's. Do not hug me if you're a guy, okay? I don't want to do that. And I don't even want to hug the girls, to tell you the truth, because it's just getting a little bit too personal. And I realized in this last period where I was changing things that I was pushing love away. I don't want to do that anymore. I want to be open. I don't want to stand here in front of you with my arms crossed like this. Metaphorically, I want to be everywhere with my hands open. I don't know what's coming. But if either I've got a higher power or I don't have a higher power. If I have a higher power, I'm going to get through it. Now, remember how big I am. I'm not going to get harmed. Why am I afraid like I'm 12 years old? You're not going to come and slap me upside the head. And if you do, I'm going to be okay. Okay, what I'm afraid of is somebody hugging me or somebody loving me or whatever. I don't want to do that anymore. And I apologize to anybody who's like me who's saying, shut up with that four-letter word. I don't want to hear about love. I don't blame you. But I'm telling you, I grew into it. AA changed things for me. It made me open. It made me realize I had been so wrong for so long. So now I have to listen. And when I wasn't listening, God created an event that changed my life. It was a terrible event, but there was a blessing attached for me. And I'm grateful for that. And I'm really, really grateful for Van because he brought me here. I really thought there was going to be 50 people here. I was going to talk for 10 minutes. I think I'm pretty much done. But I want to thank you for being here. The only thing I want to say to the newcomers is this. You think I'm sober a long time. I think I'm scraping my way through the day. So we'll go with your definition. So pretend I know what I'm talking about, okay? Here's the deal. I have no intention of not drinking for the rest of my life. If you didn't hear that, if you're new, you think you misheard that, here's the deal. I'm not quitting forever. I'm just not drinking today. And if I wake up in the morning and I look at my watch, and my watch says today, I will make a decision, hopefully, that I'm not going to drink. If you offer me a drink today, I say, no, not today, maybe tomorrow, but not today. I can't do it today. I made a commitment. So I'm not going to drink today. Now, I got married for the rest of my life twice. I took jobs for the rest of my life. I don't have to tell you about that. Okay. I did a lot of things for the rest of my life. The only thing that's ever worked for me is I don't pick up a drink today and I don't put it down my throat today. I don't do that. And I have been doing that for, 13,500 days. I promise you, a lot of people have the program working better for them than it's worked for me. I think it'll work better for you than it has for me. But this not drinking today, I can promise you, this worked for me. And if you don't believe me, don't drink today. Call my bluff. See what happens. And I hope it works as well for you as it has for me. Maybe I'm not as great as this guy, but compared to me, I'm doing amazing. Thank you very much.